This will fire you up on a Saturday morning. Good morning, all y'all. Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to Rosie on the House. Good morning. Good Saturday morning, Rosie on the House, Arizona's weekend wake-up tradition for 28 years. I'm here at the microphone. Romy's here at my right in the big boss chair there as co-host, but driving of the ship. Thank you for always being here, Mr. Romy.
My pleasure. I get asked that sometimes. So what is your role? I kind of think, you know, I kind of probably, if you compare it to anything else, probably the drummer. Just keep the beat and keep the pace going. All right.
No, it's a lot more
than
that,
when the lead singer
man.
Kind of goes off on a solo guitar over here, bring him back. Or somebody goes off on a tangent over here, bring him back. Keep the pace. Keep everything moving.
We don't have Sweet Jennifer here today. She's on a girls' trip with my three daughters and four granddaughters, one grandson. They're at my sister's farm in the high up in the Ozark Hills outside of Branson, Missouri. So hopefully they'll all be getting eaten alive by chiggers and ticks and lice and the grass and the, I don't know.
That was the one frustrating thing I remember visiting there 20 years ago last time. Is
beautiful place.
You cannot walk outside and come back in. They made you take a shower every single time. And you're like, this is ridiculous. But every time you got in the shower, you would find another tick somewhere hidden on you. That would be a challenging.
So the girls are on a girls' trip. Jennifer and I will be apart for 10 days. They left Thursday. In 38 years of marriage, we've never been apart for 10 days.
Wow.
We have never been apart for 10 days. I've never been in my own house by myself.
Are you going to send Carol away, or she?
Carol flies out today.
Oh, that's right. That's right. She's going too.
I have never been in my. I've lived in that house for 30 years. I've never been in that house by myself.
So there's going to be three Drakes, two Stumbos. That's a lot of kids to constantly wash in and out of the house. They're going to spend half the day showering.
Yeah. So we've got Rosie, we've got Romy, we've got Mike Reisch, our broadcast engineer, and Miss Stephanie Acuna will come in and do our call screening as she so reliably does when Jennifer is caught traveling on a Saturday. And this morning, I'm going to cover some material. Y'all need to wake up, okay? You're just slowly kind of dragging out of bed, and you're kind of shaking out the bedhead, and, you know, your brain may be a little cloudy from waking up. Allergies are horrible right now. Maybe you took a Benadryl before you went to bed last night. It takes you a little extra time to wake up. Benadryl does that to me. I take it the night before, and it takes me like 40 minutes to wake up the next morning. So we're going to bring in Dr. Sky. There's been a lot of big news of things going up and on in the universe, and you're going to have to exercise your brain. So this next few minutes is going to be like brain calisthenics. Let's bring Dr. Sky into the conversation. Good morning, Dr. Sky. Thank you for joining Rosie on the House.
Good morning, Rosie and Romy. Always a pleasure to be with you, folks.
And I never, ever bring Dr. Sky in without starting the program. How fast is the speed of light?
186,282 miles per second on this early Saturday morning. How about that?
180,000 miles per second.
186,282. Okay. There you go. Okay. Super fast.
And so if we got in a spaceship traveling at the speed of light, and launched it from Scottsdale Airport, how long would it take us to get to the end of the known universe, traveling 186,000 miles per second?
What we think, about 13.5 billion miles on, billion light years, excuse me, 186,282 miles per second, it's about 13.5 billion light years just to one edge of the universe. So.
And you got to turn around and go to the other side.
That's exactly right.
What has blown my mind more than that is I've somehow stumbled across this video. Our galaxy is a vortex. And the way, instead of thinking about the planets
stationary
rotating around
the sun, with everything rotating around it, and then every planet has a couple moons orbiting around it. Mm-hmm. Okay, I got that picture in my head.
But this video illustrates the motion around the sun while the sun is moving, and yet another circular 77,000 whatever lights.
Really?
I mean, just I'll put a link to it, but it's called Our Galaxy is a Vortex. And it to go around our galaxy once, according to this video, mm-hmm. for the sun to go around once, 226 million years.
Right, and that's called a cosmic year, guys. That's the longest time interval that we know. So how about that, Rosie?
That alone will warm up your oatmeal.
I'm already awake. I'd love it.
Okay. Well, we brought Dr. Sky on because there's history-making news going on in space. But before we get to it, Dr. Sky, let's go back to Astronomy 101. Define for us the difference between a meteor, a meteorite, a comet, and an asteroid.
Well, let's start with the biggest of them all. Comets are these objects which some astronomers describe as dirty snowballs, and that needs a better introduction because an object that, let's say, has a diameter of 10 miles, I'm going to use 10 miles as probably a smaller lower limit. These are debris that were left over from the creation of the solar system, and they have this little, like you would take a donut and sprinkle on some light white powdered sugar, let's say. This is the snow coating or materials. They call these the volatile materials on the surface of a comet. And what these objects do is they're way out there beyond Pluto. They're in a cloud called, the astronomers call this an Oort cloud. And every so often, the hand of gravity pulls in a few of these objects. So comets are rather large chunks of material left over from the creation of the solar system. They produce tails because a lot of those volatiles burn off as they get heated as they get closer to the sun. Now, those in themselves are dangerous objects if they get too close to the Earth. But going back to the smaller particles, you have these little tiny shattered objects in space which are called, and some of them are pretty large, I should say, asteroids, between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. We all know that from basic astronomy. Some of them can range from the size of a speck of beach sand all the way up to the giant Ceres, the asteroid. Those are okay, and we have to be careful of what comes close to the Earth called near-Earth objects. But the other little objects, they're called meteoroids. They float around in space from the meteor showers. They come into the atmosphere as a meteor, and then if they successfully hit the ground, like we know the object on June 2nd that was up over Payson,
yes.
If you find one on the ground, you found a meteorite. It thus becomes part of the Earth. The object transfers from meteoroid, meteor as it burns up, and if it doesn't completely burn up, you've got meteorite.
Do they name those? Do we have a name for the one that hit Arizona?
That's an interesting question. And I've talked to Bill Cook over there at NASA that I stay in touch with. He's the expert on the orbital elements of this. But no, it doesn't have an official name. It would just be basically called the June 2nd Arizona meteor fall.
Okay. All right. And so where does asteroid fall in all of that again?
It's kind of in the middle. They're smaller than most comets, and I say most being a generalist this morning. But the asteroids, just remember, this big body of objects that's between Mars and Jupiter, if you were to look down on top of the whole solar system and you had eyes that could see these things in entirety, you'd see these a whole field of debris, like a Saturn's ring, so to speak, but kind of spread out. And that's a whole other story, Rosie, that how that became unto itself, whether two objects collided or whether that's the area that was shepherded as the solar system was created. It's kind of an area to put waste and junk as the solar system, if it could talk. Maybe that's an area where all these objects were shepherded and pushed in by gravity between Jupiter and the sun.
Now, that battleship-sized object that looked like a human skull that was headed towards Earth about last Halloween.
Yes.
That was like all too creepy altogether all at one time.
It is very creepy.
Was that a meteor, or was that an asteroid, or was that a comet?
Well, that was a small asteroid, and it was one of the dangerous things, theoretically, we call the near-Earth object, or simply near-Earth asteroid. It's an asteroid, and it was probably on the size, I mean, we could go on for, there's thousands of these type of objects, but this one somehow had a face just in time for Halloween that wasn't your friendly face. And it appeared that way. It wasn't taken with a camera. That's a radar image. Imagine that. Radio telescope fires off a signal, and it gets like a composite image like you did the 3D modeling. It just created this little face. That's what it was. At least it looked like a face.
It did.
Here's the problem. It's a tiny little object that probably, if it were to get too close to the Earth, would make the June 2nd and the Russian event that came through the atmosphere in 2013, called Chelyabinsk, just a walk in the park. Because if it hit the Earth, absolute devastation, not global devastation, but it's something we have to be concerned about, Rosie. These objects called near-Earth objects, we did not see all of them, and there's many reasons why we don't.
I want to talk about that, because when we had you on in November talking about that particular asteroid, you said it came to us from the blind side of the universe.
Yes, it did.
The concept of a blind side of the universe, when we have the number of satellites orbiting Earth, and I want to get to Juno, the one we just sent to Jupiter. You would think with all those eyes in the sky, there'd be no blind side of the universe.
Well, you'd think so. And in this case, not to alarm your listeners that are just waking up here on Saturday morning, any further than we have to, or any more than we have to, an object like this, that one tiny little thing, as we call it, the skull phase, it basically came from, as if you're staring at the sun right now. If you're driving, don't do that. If you're walking your dog, don't do that, and don't do that anyway. But imagine as you stare in toward the sun, you know how overpowering and you don't want to do it. That's the general direction where, let's say, that particular asteroid came from. So no matter how sophisticated a telescope we have or a spacecraft, there's always an area in space where the sun is shining, even if you're out there. And I haven't been, but just imagine in your mind's eye this morning as you're out in space and you look toward the sun. The object that we're talking about in this case came directly from that area, so there's no way that you'd be able to detect this. And the point is that the object that we called the skull face for Halloween, this asteroid, we saw it only days or in some cases hours after it came from that blindsided area. So that's the dangerous type of object. Luckily, there aren't too many.
Luckily, there aren't. Bruce Willis must stay suited up, right? That's the moral of that story. More with Dr. Sky right after this. We made history in space this week, and we're going to talk about that when we get back.